Good morning.
Good morning.
It's about time to get started. So, everybody go and have a seat. I'd go ahead and like to start us off with a prayer, if you don't mind. So, let us pray. Our beloved Father in Heaven, we thank you so much for all the things that you do for us each day. Father, we hope that you will be with us while we are here worshiping your Son. Help us during this class to do the things and say the things that will convince the world that we worship you and no other. Please take care of us as we go home today because the weather is inclement. Help us all to remember your Son in everything we do and everything we say. We ask in Christ's name, amen. As I said a minute ago, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to start off by reading a few verses out of Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. God saw the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was the evening and the morning of the first day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. God called the expanse heaven, and there was the evening and the morning of the second day. Then God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees on the earth bearing fruit after their kind with seed in them." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seeds after their kind, and trees bearing fruit with seeds in them after their kind. And God saw that it was good. There was the evening and the morning of the third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. Let there be signs for the seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to govern the day, the lesser light to govern the night. He made the stars also. God placed them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to govern the day and the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. There was evening and the morning of the fourth day. I just wanted to read those verses because it starts off, obviously, with the creation of not just the earth, but the universe. And we're going to be talking today about, because like I said, I've been looking at this book called Christian Evidences, and it's basically some lessons about how to make sure that you can stay faithful, how to make sure that you know how to answer questions about your faith from those that may not believe and those that definitely do not believe. It's one of those things that man has been interested in, you know, since there was the first man. From the earliest times, man has been interested in the question of his origin. And it's one of those things that you wonder about. It's, you know, it is definitely not what a lot of people call a peripheral issue. You'd be amazed how many people today don't really think about it. They're not interested in that because they go about their day-to-day lives and they don't really understand what it took to literally bring something out of nothing. And that's exactly what God did. There are a lot of issues that come to this. This particular lesson is called Christianity and Science. Contrary to popular belief, there really is not a war between Christianity and science. There are a lot of people that want you to think that there is, but there really isn't. Let's face it. Science has made, just tremendous strides in areas of knowledge, technology. The things that we have today, people 50 years ago would not even have, you know, imagined most of them. And every day there are new discoveries in science. And that's good in, you know, 99.9% of the instances. Now, every now and then we come up with something that's bad, and that's just the way that man is. He is not perfect. And men on earth are not perfect. We never have been, we never will be. And that imperfection can be something small, like you don't write as well as other people. I know that if you, as myself, as an example, if I try to write in cursive handwriting, it looks like ancient Egyptian because I've just never been good at it. Now, if I'm really careful, I can make it so some people can read it. But if I'm just writing with the way I can read it, but nobody else can. Science is just, you know, amazing in some of the things that it has done. But the main point of this particular lesson is that, true science and true religion have never opposed each other. Not in reality. Now, there are many people that want to act like they do, but they don't. They agree if we look at it with an open mind and looking for the truth instead of an agenda, because that's what happens today. And it's been happening for, you know, 100 years off and on. People have an agenda, and in many cases that can basically take them away from the truth. And they do it on purpose, because they think that their agenda is better than what's true. There was something I wanted to read right here. Science has made great strides in the areas of both knowledge and technology that many have come to believe that science does not first prove something true. Judgment must be suspended, and anything with which the sacrosanct scientific method cannot deal with must be discarded, ignored, or belittled. This has generated the false philosophy of, you've probably heard the term, scientism. That is something that actually it started back in the 50s in reality. There have always been people that, you know, didn't really believe in Christianity. Let's face it, that's just the way it is. But this new way that people try to look at science like it's their own God, their own religion. Can get to the point to where some people don't even, you know, consider God, Christianity, or even consider, you know, all the other religions in the world, you know, some of them which are completely crazy, some of them are a little closer to what's true. But an atheist back a few years ago, his name was George Simpson, said, "Man stands alone in the universe, a unique product of a long, unconscious, impersonal, material process with unique understanding and potentialities. These he owes to no one but himself, and it is to himself that he is responsible. He is not the creature of a uncontrollable or undiscriminate forces, but is his own master. He can and must decide and manage his own destiny." That's gentleman who said it, George Simpson, was a professor at Harvard University. And so he, you know, had all the right buttons pushed and all the right checks on his resume, except, you know, what I just read is, well, at least in our opinion, ridiculous. But you'd be amazed how many people think that. I mean, what is science anyway? Anybody have an opinion? I mean, if somebody says that something is scientific, what does that mean?
They have thought it out.
Mm-hmm. That's true in a lot of cases. I mean, what it's supposed to mean, that something has been studied, has been qualified, has been completely proven to be true before it's actually true science. Now, there are theories, and yes, they call them scientific theories. But, you know, when it comes to science, the thing about science and creation is they really don't disagree unless somebody wants them to. Science stands for a way of study and an attitude of mind to leave theories and prejudices to one side, to bring an open mind and ask only for the truth, to study concrete facts with endless patience, to try and find an order of behavior in the world as indicated by these facts, to test these findings by experiment and more facts, that is the spirit and the method of science. Now that sounds pretty good, but you'd be amazed how many scientists don't really do it that way. They come up with a theory, and no matter what else anybody says or can prove, they still believe in that theory. And evolution isn't the only one, but that is the main one that we're speaking about in this class. Science is primarily a method for the dealing of matter in action through 1, observation and experimentation, 2, analysis, 3, derivation of a physical law or a concept, 4, prediction in terms of that law. Science is concerned with a given physical system already in operation. The trouble is that when it comes to ultimate origins of the earth, of the universe, of the stars, of us, they have no explanation. Now, some of them will try to explain it, and that's one of the basis of what I like to call interspecies evolution, which is absolutely not true. There's never been a case of interspecies evolution, but they try to claim like there was. I mean, I'm not sure about you guys, but I'm pretty sure that I didn't come from a dinosaur. But the point is that when you're talking in the scientific community today, that is what a lot of them believe. Now, believe it or not, it's not as prevalent as it was about 40 years ago. 40 years ago, it was considered to be basically the Holy Grail. You know, science was everything. Evolution was everything. But the trouble is that people started finding things that couldn't be explained by science, that couldn't be explained by evolution. Science can provide many answers if it's true science, if it's studied the way science should be. But when it comes to the universe and many things that have to do with how it moves, obviously how it was created, and how we do in some ways, even the simplest things, science just, they don't know how to explain it. There are little things that you can look at every day that you just, science can't explain. And some of them are simple. How many of you had a bicycle when you were a kid? Did you ever ride the bicycle along and then jump off the back of it and let it go and see it keep rolling? And then when it finally stopped, it would fall over? That's supposed to be impossible. There is no scientific explanation as to why that bike keeps going. And if you do it when you're going down a hill, it'll keep going a lot. But that's not supposed to happen. One of my favorite things, and you guys have heard me talk about it before, is the hummingbird. It is absolutely scientifically impossible for a hummingbird to fly. Oh, and a bumblebee, too. It can't fly. What you're seeing must be just some sort of an illusion. And what they really have a problem with is if you ever look at hummingbirds, they can fly upside down and sideways and backwards. And they have no explanation, none at all, as to why they can. So remember that next time you either see a bicycle or a hummingbird, or a hummingbird riding a bicycle. That would be even better. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is no matter what they say or what they do, you need to remember that there are some facts, some things that happen on a daily basis that they can't explain. But a lot of times they don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about their theories. There are things having to do with science that are absolutely fabulous. But let's face it, there are things that science just cannot even conceive of an answer for. Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting in this this particular chapter of this book, that actually religious people can be almost at a disadvantage when they're debating with people that believe in evolution, in science. Because if they want to argue about it, all they say is, well, there's no evidence for that religion is true. They don't have to be specific. You know, they don't have to say Church of Christ people or Catholics or Muslims or whatever. But if we're going to argue against it, we have to have our facts completely straight. And that includes facts about their science. Because, and it happens all the time. I mean, if you go back and look at some of the transcriptions of debates, if you listen to the science side, they, in most cases, are a little vague about their presentation, about what they think, about what they think is true and what they think is not true. But on the other side, if we're going to try to debate it, we have to be absolutely specific about our, not only our beliefs, but about our understanding of their beliefs. And I mean, I'm not claiming that it's unfair, even though it is, but it's just funny how that happens in any debate you've ever seen. If they're talking about the difference between evolution and science, evolution is, even today, and it's not as bad as it was 20 years ago, it's still taken as a fact, and it's not. If you really push them, they'll admit that. But it, in classrooms all over the world, evolution is still taught as a fact. And as a matter of fact, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, if you object to that, you're the one that is singled out, not them, for lying. You're singled out for telling the truth. I mean, now, don't get me wrong. Am I saying that science is wrong? No, I'm not. I mean, we wouldn't be anywhere near as advanced as we are now. We wouldn't have these lights. You know, we wouldn't have the roads to drive on. We didn't have the cars to drive on the roads. All the, particularly now, all the medical advances that we've been able to make that have basically given hope to millions of people about diseases that 50 years ago we thought, I mean, let's face it, sorry, you've got that disease, you're going to die. And for a long time, that's exactly how it was. But because of science, you know, people have worked on it. You know, it's funny. Sometimes I think if we, and I'm not saying we, Church of Christ, but we as religious people, were as dedicated to our religion as some people have been to their science, you know, we might be better at it. Because people have dedicated their whole lives to doing this one thing that would cure a certain kind of cancer or malaria or one of the other diseases that used to kill millions of people. Because unfortunately, some of these diseases still do. It's just not like it used to be. Malaria still kills thousands of people a year. But unfortunately, in many places in the world, they still don't have the medical advances that would allow them to get an inoculation or vaccination. I'm not a doctor, so I don't really know the difference, but to help things like that. And malaria is just one of them. There are many of them that, you know, are still in certain parts of the world just devastating. But, you know, you can only do what you can do. And one thing we need to remember, too, that, and I'm not saying that science isn't great, because it is. I mean, just think of all the things that we can do. I mean, one of the greatest scientists ever, at least in my opinion, is Wernher von Braun. Everything from the German V2 to the Artemis 2 that just came back from the moon is because of his work, what, 80 years ago now? I mean, he's basically the father of rocketry, period. And, but he is not an evolutionist. He believes in God, which I thought was interesting. And science, I mean, the way science works, if it's done in its pure form, is good. I mean, you have all probably done this when you were in school, but you've all heard about, you know, if you're going to have an experiment, you know, you have the observation of the experiment. Statement and definition of whatever the problem is that you're trying to solve. Formation of a hypothesis about it. Deduction from hypothesis and predictions. You do the experiment, and then once the experiment is concluded, you come up with your theory of why it went that way. Now, is that science all through it? Oh, yes. And it's true. That's the way you should do it. But there are some things, and if you really pin them down, they'll admit it, that science just can't explain. But they don't want to hear about those. And, but fortunately, in a lot of schools now, that the theory of, I guess, what I call interspecies evolution is starting to fall away. Which is good, because it's been the gospel for years. When I was a kid, oh, I mean, that was it. I mean, I believed in it. I mean, that's what they told me. But it's something that they now are starting to realize doesn't work. Otherwise, you know, you could make a dog from a cat. I mean, that's obviously simplified, but that is what it's really saying. It is that if I breed a cat long enough, it'll turn into some other animal because of whatever the outside source is or the need of that animal to do something that it can't do now. But the thing that when you're talking about science, the way they do it, and am I anti-science? No, I am not. But the way they do things is, if they do them correctly, they can lead to all sorts of absolutely fabulous things that happen. And I mean, the first step in science is you basically come up with a hypothesis of what you, well, actually, that's not true. That you come up with, you observe something, and then you make a statement about that particular issue, of a definition of what the issue or problem is when you're dealing with that particular thing. Then you form a hypothesis, which I still can't spell, about that particular thing. And then you make deductions based on your hypothesis and your prediction of how this is going to work. And from that, you move into whatever experiment you're going to do about this particular issue to see if what you said is what really happens. And then from if your experimentation is successful, then you can finally come up with a theory about why it was that way. And if science would really work that way, then you really wouldn't have a problem. But unfortunately, a lot of people push their theory to the point, even when it doesn't work. And they've come up with this, and therefore it's supposed to work that way. Now, does it work a little bit? A lot of times it does. But does it work like they say it was supposed to work? No, it doesn't. And if you have a theory that seems to keep working over and over and over again, it can actually become what they call a law. But it's not a law like a law against speeding. It's a scientific law that can last a long time. But sometimes it can be disproven. So you have to be careful about how that works. Now, one of the things that I wanted to touch on is that we need to remember that contrary to what you're going to see out in the world, particularly from the scientific world, is they think that science and religion are 180 degrees off from each other. They could never be together. They can't work. They're just, it's one or the other. You can't have both. Well, that's not true. I mean, you can have both because in the vast majority of cases, there's nothing in the Bible that goes against science. Now, in a few cases, there are. I mean, and it depends on which way science is going. And sometimes they, like I said, with the old attitude of about evolution. Like when I was a kid, evolution was it. That's the way everything worked. That was it. Well, like I said, now they're discovering that they have never found a case where they could prove one species that turned into another one. Now, within maybe I'm using the wrong word, species, but now if you talk about how many different kinds of cats there are, just house cats, yeah, there are a lot of different kinds, but they're all cats. And, you know, dogs are the same way. Or, and a lot of times and I'll be the first to admit, you know, you see, I can't believe how many different kinds of cats, dogs, mice, things like that there are. That both animals that are, quote, domesticated, and those that are wild. They discover 16,000 species of new animals every year. Now, some of them are, you know, little tiny animals that you can see in a microscope, but not all of them are. And I was reading something the other day about a cat that they found somewhere in Africa that nobody's ever seen before. But things like that continue to happen. But remember, we're talking about new species of animals. One, a dog cannot become a cat. You know, a cat can't become a bird. And until, but according to the old theory of evolution, and by old, I mean because it goes back a ways now, because it's still in many educational facilities, including colleges and universities, that interspecies evolution is true, even though they can't show one case of it actually being true. It's true because I say it's true. And it just isn't. So it's just one of the things that I know you know, bringing up my kids when they went to public school. When it came to that, we talked to them about it. Said, yeah, you're going to learn this, and you need to learn it. But don't forget that it's not true. And sometimes they can debate it, but they can't prove it. The one of the things that I was reading about the other day is, where was it? It's about truth. Now, I don't know who George Gaylord Simpson actually is, but I've heard the name before, and apparently he's very prominent. But he says the concept of truth in science is thus quite special. It implies nothing eternal and absolute, but only a high degree of confidence after adequate self-testing and self-correcting. Above the level of triviality, there is hardly any scientific subject on which agreement is literally universal. So basically what he's saying is that scientists can't agree on a lot of these things even among themselves, much less among other people and among religious people that don't believe in interspecies evolution. The one thing that I was thinking about the other day was that when you're talking about a scientist and science, you have to remember that, you know, we think about science, and some of us think about, like, I guess you call them formal sciences, like math, logic. Physical sciences, like physics, biology, psychology, you know, go on and on and on. Social sciences, like sociology, political science, and other things like that. But when you go, science assumes certain things which seem to require no proof, which are recognized through common sense. The five basic assumptions of science are, quote, one, nature is understandable. In other words, there is uniformity. Two, all nature is subject to the same laws. Three, measurable causes underlie observable effects. Four, the simplest explanation is probably the correct one. That's the principle of parsimony, otherwise known as Occam's razor. And the familiar is explainable in terms of familiar through analogy. Now, what all that really means is that they use these terms to describe what they call science and what they are trying to prove, that it's absolutely true in 100% of the cases. And they will tell you that. But that is not true. It's like one of those things that you just can't believe that people say. Because every day they turn around and they figure out that, well, this species is not really what we thought it was 10 years ago. It's now this. Or that species doesn't really belong to that group. It belongs to this group. And it goes on and on and on. If you look through textbooks that have been published, you know, over the last 200 years, you will see all sorts of changes in how they redefined what they thought was true when it comes to interspecies evolution. And they have a tendency now to cling to it because they don't really have another explanation that they want to admit. The trouble is that when I say they cling to it, it's like to the point where they don't want to hear anything else, particularly in the public system of education. Now, you know, I'll be the first to admit, if you go to Freed Hardeman University, they don't go by that. But if you go to any public university, there is no other way except their way. And that's just one of those things that you need to get used to. I was fortunate, the last 2 years of college, I got to go to Freed Hardeman. My first 2 years of college, I went to, I forget what it was now. This is a college in Northeast Florida. Was it Jacksonville? No, I can't remember. But my parents told me that if I'd go to the first 2 years and pay for it myself, they'd send me anywhere I wanted to go for my last 2 years. So I got to go to, at that time, Freed Hardeman College. Now it's Freed Hardeman University. But there was one other thing I wanted to read, if I could find it here before our time is up in about 2 seconds. Okay, here it is. You heard me mention before Wernher von Braun. I mean, he's basically, there would be no rockets or spaceships or even jet planes without him. To understand a scientist who does not acknowledge the presence of a superior rationality behind the existence of the universe as it is, to comprehend a theologian who would deny the advances of science. And there is certainly no scientific reason why God cannot retain the same position in our modern world that he has held before. We began probing his creation with telescopes and cyclotrons. I deplore the attitude that scientific enlightenment and religious belief are incompatible. I considered it one of the greatest tragedies of our times that this is so widely believed. Through a closer look at creation, we ought to gain a better knowledge of the Creator and a greater sense of man's responsibility to God will come into focus. Science and religion are not antagonists, but sisters. Both seek ultimate truth. Science helps to reveal more about the Creator through his creation. The public has a deep respect for the amazing scientific advances made within our lifetimes. There is admiration for the scientific process of observation, experimentation, of testing every concept to measure its validity. But it still bothers some people that we cannot prove scientifically that God exists. Must we light a candle to see the sun? And don't forget, he was Mr. Rocket. Everything we've done with rockets, spaceships, jet airplanes came from him. I wanted to thank everybody for listening to me drone on for 40 minutes today. I appreciate it. And I'm talking about these because I think it's something that we need to know. We need to be able to explain why we believe the way we believe. And
who wrote that book?
Bert Thompson and Wayne Jackson. I've met Bert Thompson. I don't know who Wayne Jackson is, but they're both Christian writers, I think. But there, there are a number of these kinds of things. This one is from Apologetics Press. Thank you.